This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan. We're broadcasting today from the Knight Studio at the Newseum, Washington, D.C.'s newest museum devoted to journalism and the news business. 35 years ago, Timothy Krause introduced us to The Boys on the Bus. Tim Krause's book on the political reporters who covered the 1972 presidential campaign pulled back the curtain on one important aspect of presidential politics. Some of the reporters he described: Robert Novak, David Broder, Hunter S. Thompson, and Cassie Mackin, part of a group that traveled everywhere with the candidates, stayed in the same hotels, ate at the same restaurants, and listened to the same speeches over and over and over again. The whole pack, he wrote, was isolated in the same mobile village. In the midst of the longest presidential campaign in American history, we want to check in with a few of the boys and girls on the bus today and give you a chance to ask them what it's like to cover a candidate and a campaign. In just a moment, our own Don Gagne and David Green and Elizabeth Holmes of the Wall Street Journal will be with us. If you'd like to know more about their jobs, how they do them, about access to the candidates, handling the spin and the fatigue and the tedium, our phone number is 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. And you can join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blog of the nation. A little later in the program, a new feature here at the Newseum, a question of ethics. But first, covering the long and winding, very long and winding campaign trail. Joining us here at the Newseum, Don Gagne, who's been covering Senator Barack Obama's campaign for NPR, David Green, who has crisscrossed the country with Senator Hillary Clinton. He also reports for NPR, and Elizabeth Holmes, who's been on the Straight Talk Express with Senator John McCain for the Wall Street Journal. And welcome to you all.
Good to be here.
Good to be here, Neil.
Thank you.
And Don, let me start with you. Is it anything like that old memory of The Boys on the Bus?
It's very different. Now, I have not read that book since I was in college.
And grade school you're going to try to get away with?
Not too long after that, the book came out. There are things about it that are similar. I mean, the bubble is the bubble is the bubble. And you're always mindful of the security around you, and you're always mindful of just how big of a hassle it is sometimes to pierce that bubble. And once you're in it, you recognize that sometimes you just need to stay there. And that kind of feel did come through. But they were living in a world back in the 70s of one deadline a day, filing at the end of the day for your paper in the morning, or,
National Public Radio,
There was no morning edition, for example, back then.
Wasn't that great?
So long ago. And now we are literally, doing live interviews from the rolling bus and recording ourselves into our digital compact flash recorders and, taking those files and, while the bus is rolling, transferring them into our computers and submitting it as we roll through, through the Dells or through wherever in the Midwest or whatever swing state we happen to be in there on any given day.
David Green, is there an aspect of it that also Tim Krause commented on? It was sort of the zoo bus. The reporters inside this bubble tended to get a little rowdy from time to time. I remember particularly mooing as the campaign tried to move them from one space to another.
It can get a little rowdy. In fact, I think this is the case for the other campaigns. Usually the back of the plane or the back of the bus is where it's particularly rowdy and starts to get the feel of even a fraternity or sorority party, because it's decorating. Sometimes you have a dancing ball, and they might set up music and spinning some tunes and having a few drinks at the end of the day. But what strikes me is not changing is really that it's this strange shared experience. I mean, we're obviously doing very different jobs than the people who work for the campaign, and there should clearly be a significant barrier there. But at the same time, in just sort of your daily life routine, we're all together. We're eating the same really old, stale pizza that happens to be sitting on the back of the bus. We're landing at hotels, at 2 o'clock in the morning and getting just an hour or two of sleep. So it's a weird situation where we want to keep a distance, but sometimes you feel like we're all in this sort of troop together.
Elizabeth Holmes, is there a pack mentality? And also, you guys are a captive audience for the spinmeisters of the campaign.
Absolutely. It's very hard to kind of separate yourself from the other reporters and come up with something that's not out there already. And when news does break, everybody, it doesn't matter if you're a television reporter or a newspaper reporter, you run and you try and file a blog post as quickly as possible. And that kind of competition of, well, what are you writing? What do you have? And trying to pull people aside the minute you try and pull an advisor aside, five other reporters come up with their tape recorders in hand. And so it's very hard to break free from that bubble.
And I, one of the things that used to happen in the old days is people would check quotes with each other. These days, everybody has a tape recorder.
Absolutely. Everybody has a tape recorder, and oftentimes people share audio because when there's 12 tape recorders trying to get to the same mouth, you can't always get the best quality. And so people will go so far as to share audio and checking quotes and things like that. And it's nice to bounce ideas off of people, but it's difficult to break any kind of news in that situation.
Don Gagne, daisy chains of tape recorders, you feed the candidate speech to 12 other people?
You do. And, the candidate, Senator Obama, will come back and talk to us on the plane. And, plane aisles are really small, and they are just not made for press conferences. And suddenly, with no notice, there he is. And what happens is, everybody stands up and fills the aisle, and you suddenly realize that, even though you're only, the fourth person deep, you're as close as just about anybody else, you're still too far away for your microphone. So you're kind of handing your microphone and threading its cord up to some print reporter up there, hoping they know which end to point at the candidate's mouth.
And you're sometimes.
And then everybody shares the audio, not so much through that daisy chain of cables that we used to do when it was reel-to-reel and cassette recorders, but by swapping the audio file on our flash cards. And
Sounds so romantic.
It is. And there is certainly competition, and there is certainly the desire to find that story that nobody else has. And it's one of the things that's nice about working for NPR, because we often have just a different kind of take on the day's story, because we're not worried about just cranking it out and getting it on fast as much. But with that competition, there is that camaraderie. It's we are all in this together, and we are sharing audio, and it's kind of the misery loves company index, I think.
Don Gagne, also with us, NPR's David Green and Elizabeth Holmes of the Wall Street Journal, all on the bus this year covering different presidential candidates. If you'd like to join the conversation about their very unusual jobs, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. And let's begin with Andy. Andy's calling us from Cincinnati in Ohio.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure, go ahead, please.
I wanted to ask, as citizens following these campaigners, do you find yourself being sucked in by their message, or do you find that you have enough exposure to other candidates to make your own personal informed decision about who you want to vote for?
David Green?
I think we're very careful not to be sucked into the message, and it's easier since I think we've all been doing this for a while to make sure that's not the case. The struggle, Andy, that I think that I feel like I face sometimes is not getting the full perspective of the day. Being with just Hillary Clinton, I can have skepticism about what she's saying, I can be familiar with the policies, I can listen to what she's saying, but I don't know what's really going on globally on the campaign trail. How is this event being seen? How would a voter out there somewhere see this event compared to what Barack Obama or what Senator McCain said that day? So it's one reason that Don and I, and I think our other colleagues are always checking in and sort of comparing notes to make sure we're keeping the right perspective and not just seeing one sliver of the day or the week.
Elizabeth Holmes, let's hear from you on this.
Absolutely. I think it's a challenge to get a perspective, like David said, on the outside world, and you get sucked into the Washington world of thinking that everybody is following every single hiccup that this candidate has in the way that I am. But that's not the case. And the average reader, I often will sometimes call my father in Chicago and say, Dad, have you heard about this? Just to kind of get a completely normal person take on things. And I think that it is an important thing to talk to your colleagues, not only that are covering other candidates, but also my editor in Washington is good at bouncing things off and seeing what really matters and what really is news, whereas what, the campaign is trying to spin as news.
Hmm. Thanks very much for the call, Andy.
Thank you very much.
And let me ask you also, Elizabeth, some days the campaign wants to make news, and some days they don't. But every once in a while, the candidate will go out and commit news anyway. Those are interesting moments.
Absolutely. I mean, there's the campaigns are very choreographed, and they have a message that they want to get out that day. And if Senator McCain has given a big speech on something, chances are he won't come back and talk to reporters because they want that message to stand as the message of the day. But every now and then there will be a hiccup, and he'll make an aside or a comment, or something else will happen by another candidate, and he'll react. And that becomes the news of the day, and everybody kind of scrambles. And it's interesting how cable news has changed the whole story of the day idea, because they can run a story and loop it over and over, and if you know, enough people see it and picks up on it, then it becomes the story of the day. And then so you find yourself not only reacting to what the candidate has done, but then reacting to cable news, which is tricky.
David Green, you don't get cable news on the bus.
You don't, but it's incredible how Elizabeth said, as the cable news and the blogs can really drive the news coverage. If there's a hiccup that we sort of feel is not that important, and I remember Barack Obama's lapel pin was one example
of
one
flag,
story.
Yeah.
Exactly. It was picked up in one interview, local television interview, and then all of a sudden it showed up on the Associated Press wire. It was on blogs. It was on newspaper websites, to the point where the candidates started having to talk about this, and the fact that it had showed up in one or two places and then became 10 started driving not just the news coverage, but also the decisions that the campaigns themselves were making and judging how big a story it was. So it's a totally different environment now with that.
Don?
So, something strange happens, too. We've all got our BlackBerries. You know, we're not getting the live feed of...
For those of you not here at the museum, Don is pulling out his BlackBerry.
And I've been in a situation where there's one of these impromptu press conferences with the candidate, and you're on the plane. The plane is sitting on the tarmac. It's not in the air. I mean, sometimes they do them in the air. But the plane was sitting on the tarmac, and Senator Obama would start answering questions. And then about 5 minutes into this press conference, people would be getting questions and reaction from the outside world on their BlackBerry to what he has said to us in this cocoon of the plane. And you're able to kind of get the follow-up right on the spot. And it's like you're in hyperdrive or something.
Elizabeth?
A great example of that is I was covering Romney in Florida, and we were at a press conference, and a reporter from the LA Times had gotten a recent attack that McCain had made on Romney and asked him about it right there at the press conference. And you could tell he had not heard it from his advisors. He had not heard about this at all. And it was the one where McCain accused him of setting a date for withdrawal. And he looked surprised as all get out and said, "Oh my goodness," and didn't quite know how to respond, and that ended up kind of leading to the end of his candidacy.
Elizabeth Holmes of the Wall Street Journal, NPR's David Green and Don Gagne, talking about life on the campaign trail while they have a brief moment off it. Stay with us and join the conversation. 800-989-8255. I'm Neil Conan. We're at the museum, and this is NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan, broadcasting today live from the Knight Studio inside the Newseum in Washington, D.C. Every time you hear a presidential candidate make a move from venue to venue, state to state, the reporters covering their campaigns go with them. It's a long and grinding road. We've got three of them with us today. NPR's Don Gagne and David Green have been covering the campaigns of Senators Obama and Clinton. And the Wall Street Journal's Elizabeth Holmes is also with us. She's been with Senator McCain. If you have questions about life on the campaign trail, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org, and you can read what other listeners have to say on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Let's go next to Clark, and Clark's with us from Fort Myers in Florida.
Yes, I expect that I share the views of many Americans that have or not been very happy with the level and the quality of reporting, both on this election and in general for a number of years, the trivializing of things, the cable news effect, et cetera, et cetera. What I am curious about also is how badly do you, working on the campaigns as you are, and really being acting as conduits for the talking points on a day-to-day basis, how much pressure do you feel to basically softball and enter into relationships with the campaign that you're actually being asked to cover?
Is that an aspect of it, Don, do you think?
You don't feel any pressure to softball things. You do establish relationships. You do get to know people on the campaign, and some of them are, you know, easier to get to know than others. The hope is that, you know, while you recognize their role within the campaign, that they also recognize your role in covering the campaign. But when you are that close to to the candidate, it's like you're so close and yet so far. You know, they're right here in the plane with you. They're
just to follow up on Clark's point. The Obama people, a lot of people say the Obama reporters have been dazzled and by the candidate and bought into the candidacy.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard that. You covered the story. You say what he did today. When you're inside the bubble, you are capturing kind of the mood of a campaign. You are, analyzing what he says. You're analyzing his speeches. You're doing it all on deadline. I don't see that press corps. I mean, they're really solid reporters in mm-hmm. that mix, kind of, kind of fawning over him.
Clark?
If I might make an observation, is that from out here in the hinterlands, it essentially appears that many, if not most, reporters are really not doing much more than reading the press releases that have been handed to them, and because the verbiage is word for word identical to the talking points, we just don't hear very much in the way of hard reporting. It's just sort of feeding back. At least it feels that way out here. And I'll get off and let you guys get on with it.
All right. Thanks very much for the call, Clark. And David Green, I know you read other stuff. I saw you with a Harry Potter book the other day.
Of course. That's how I get my knowledge to go cover the campaign. No, it's I think Clark raises an interesting question. I mean, we there's no science to how to cover a day on the campaign trail. And we are constantly having conversations with our editors about whether the story of the day is, to do a straight news story about a speech that Hillary Clinton gave, and I'd like to think that even in a speech like that, when we, are running sound and when newspaper reporters are putting quotes in, that we have, people who might have a different viewpoint. And then there might be the next day when we decide we're going to do a more investigative, analytical type piece looking at a broader issue, looking at Hillary Clinton's experience as First Lady and whether it matters or doesn't matter to voters. So there's no science, and I think some stories can come across more as, just sort of taking what happened in the day and feeding it to listeners and readers than others, but it's about that we try to find.
And similarly, Elizabeth Holmes, with the Obama camp, I think some people have reported that reporters get dazzled by John McCain and the extraordinary access you have to him.
Absolutely. I think that this perception is kind of in the eye of the beholder, because the McCain campaign, if you would ask them right now, would say they're not getting good media coverage, whereas if you would have asked any other Republican primary candidate back in January who was getting the best coverage, it would have been the McCain campaign. And I think, it's tough. You face the people that you write about every single day, and so you have to develop a thick skin. But I found that more than anything, you get more respect by going after them and really asking the tough questions than you would by writing any kind of softball piece.
And when you do a story about them, I mean, not the Senator McCain said today, but a broader story about a policy, do you also go outside of the bubble and interview critics of the senator's policies?
Oh, absolutely. And I think every reporter on the bus has a Rolodex of people that they call and try and get their take. And with BlackBerries, you can forward the text of the speech and get response immediately. And it's a challenge. I mean, that's what makes it hard. Different reporters will go hide in the back of the bus to try and make a phone call so that other people don't pick up on it. But it's our job to report the story thoroughly.
Senator McCain prides himself on straight, the bus is called the Straight Talk Express. He's also known for his temper. In March, Elizabeth Boumiller, a reporter for the New York Times, asked Senator McCain about a conversation that he'd had with Senator John Kerry back in 2004. Let's listen.
You told Cheryl Stolberg that you had never had a conversation with Kerry about being about vice president.
Everybody knows I had a conversation. Everybody knows that I had a conversation. There's no living American in Washington that knows that. There's no one.
Okay.
And you know it too. You know it. So I don't even know why you asked.
The candidate can be a little snippy.
I have to say I was pressed up against Elizabeth Boumiller on one of those plane press conferences when this happened. And when it happened, it did feel very intense. You're kind of crouched down holding your microphone up and he comes after you on a question that didn't quite seem like a gotcha question. It didn't quite seem, it was more clarification than trying to accuse him of something. But yes, he is definitely known for saying what he thinks and is not afraid, especially on the back of the Straight Talk, too, if you ask him a question that he thinks is accusatory, to come back at you with what his opinion is.
Does he have a temper?
I've heard he does. The closest I've seen is that exchange we just heard. But I think actually all of these politicians probably have tempers.
I know the reporters don't. Let's get another caller on the line, and this is Jeff. Jeff with us from Ann Arbor in Michigan.
Yes. Knowing that the party buses get a little hectic at times, and like she says that they go off and try and make a phone call in private, what kind of gags do they play on each other's reporting, to pass the time of day? Let's say maybe when somebody's off making that phone call, they come back, did I miss anything? Oh, yeah, he said this, and lead him off on the wrong way. Do they play gags? Do the reporters play gags on each other?
David Green?
Yes.
And if you would give us an example that we can play on a family radio program.
It was very close to a gag, and I won't mention any names because I won't be able to get back on that bus again. But it was a reporter kind of missing a bit of a speech recently, and a lot of us suggesting that Hillary Clinton had made huge news and suggested that she might be dropping out of the race very soon. And we kept it going until the reporter looked like she was ready to call her editor, and then we decided that we had to end it there. But it went on for a little while, so you nailed it.
Elizabeth?
Absolutely. I mean, it's always fun when people who have been on the bus for quite a long time see a new face walk on the bus. And
fresh meat.
Yes, exactly, from a magazine or a... another publication, and to kind of not haze them, but gently bring them into the fold as to how things go. And usually it's a what did I miss question where it's just very easy to spin them the wrong way.
Don?
I saw a moment recently, kind of the cold shoulder. Someone kind of has been out on the tarmac and calling a source who knows what, and they come under the bus and everybody's kind of frantically writing down notes and kind of studying as though something has just happened. And, of course, nothing has happened because... So, yeah, all sorts of things. And many of them just kind of impromptu, and they come and go. And it is part of how you just pass the day and pass the time.
Thanks very much for the call. Let's get a question from the audience here at the museum.
Hi, my name is Joanne Crow, and I'd like to direct this to David. While covering Hillary's campaign, did she do and say anything that made a good impression on you or changed some opinion you may have had from preconception?
You know, Joanne, that's a good question. She, Hillary Clinton has, and a lot of reporters covering her are just marvel at how she just never seems that tired, never seems that this pace that she is just keeping never seems to wear her down, and she just keeps it event after event after event, and the late nights and getting out to hotels and only a few hours of sleep. I'll never forget my Super Bowl Sunday this year. It was a night that I interviewed Hillary Clinton in the back room of a bar where she was watching the Super Bowl, and she had been out shaking the hands of a lot of voters, and it was the fourth quarter, and they brought me back to where she was sort of hanging out and making some phone calls, and we talked for 10 minutes or so, and then I turned my microphone down, and she said, you know, if you want to hang here and watch a little of the fourth quarter with me, that'd be fine. And I'm sitting here thinking, you know, my memory of the Super Bowl, we're sitting here with Hillary Clinton. But she was just exhausted, and she said, you know, I just need a minute before I go back out there and shake any more hands. And it was a side of her that you know, just we had never seen sort of in the bubble and following her around, you know, as close as we are to her, that was something she always protected. And she was just dead tired, as I think all the candidates are on a lot of days.
Heck of a fourth quarter, too.
Heck of a fourth quarter.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for the question. Let's see if we can go to this will be Andrew. Andrew with us from Sacramento in California.
Hi.
Go ahead, please.
Thanks for taking my call. Hi. So my question was, I was wondering if any of you receive a position in the White House press corps as a sort of a reward for following your candidate on the trail if, you know, that candidate happens to win. And also a second part of that, which is where I sort of found out about this, was a book by Joan Didion called Political Fiction. And she talks about some of the contradictions inherent in, you know, following a candidate on the campaign trail and reporting on that. So I was just wondering if any of you had read that book, A, and also, you know, if that was true or not. And I can probably take my question off the air.
Okay.
Oh, Thank you.
Oh, thanks, Andrew. Elizabeth, if John McCain should be elected president, would you expect to be the White House correspondent of the Wall Street Journal?
I have to make it to November 1st, and that seems like a long way off right now. You know, I don't know. The White House position is a very prominent position at the Wall Street Journal, so I'm not sure. I don't. I would know most of the people going into a McCain administration, should that be the case, and so sourcing-wise, it would be a natural transition. But I'm certainly not setting my sights on that. I'm trying to make it to the general election.
David Green, you fear you might be sentenced to the White House?
It's a different question for both Don and myself, because we've both been covering the White House for a good while.
That's why I mentioned the sentence.
Sort of different. I certainly think there. Can be benefits to having someone who covered the campaign come into the White House. It was something that I felt was somewhat of a disadvantage when I started covering George W. Bush, because I hadn't covered his first campaign. But there's also an argument to be made that bringing in a totally fresh face is a good idea as well. So it's the editor's decision. We'll leave it to them.
We're talking with three reporters on the campaign buses this season. Elizabeth Holmes of the Wall Street Journal, who's with the McCain campaign. David Green has been covering the Clinton campaign. Don Gagne has been covering the Obama campaign. Both of them work for National Public Radio. You recognize their voices. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's go to John. John with us from Columbus, Ohio.
Hi. I was interested in the technology that the reporters use while they're on the campaign trail. Having traveled myself with a laptop, I know how difficult it is to get connected, keep things working, and what happens when something breaks and you need to replace something, something needs to get fixed, and if you have horror stories about things that have happened to you with regard to the technology you're trying to use to file stories.
Elizabeth, I must say, I remember the glorious day when, as a radio reporter, I noticed that the print reporters were carrying more equipment than I did.
Absolutely. I travel with a laptop and a video camera, and often am shooting stuff to post on our website. I have to say, there's nothing more valuable than a good power strip and Wi-Fi when you're on the campaign trail, because it's the problem of my life that my battery is always running out somewhere, or that I can't get a signal to send a story. And especially, you know, with the video camera, too, oftentimes I'm trying to shoot and hold my tape recorder and then, you know, forget about the notebook in my backpack. I received this position because I said I would be willing to do a lot of that stuff. And so it's a mixed blessing, but it's also really fun. You get to do things on video that would never fly in the Wall Street Journal, but that can be fun and lighter, and especially for our blog. So it's just a different way of telling a story.
But you file by computer? You send it over computer lines, either by email or the JPEGs or whatever?
Absolutely.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Don?
We send all of our audio files via computer as well through File Transfer Protocol, FTP. Okay. And you can do it from a rolling bus as long as you've got one of those, air cards, either, Verizon or Sprint or one of those that you plug into the side of your computer. So if there's digital cell service and your battery is juiced on the computer, you can generally send, as long of a story as you have produced. I mean, a 5-6 minute story. The other thing is there's... with each campaign, with the Obama campaign, it's called the Soapbox. There's a company that provides Wi-Fi service that we pay for, and there's the Soapbox guy who's right in the bubble with the rest of us. And doesn't matter where the high school gymnasium or farmer's field or whatever it is we land in for an event, within 5 minutes, he's had an ISDN line, dropped in advance, and he's got Wi-Fi up for us all, so we generally all have high-speed internet, even in the most remote places.
I saw a look of envy cross your face, Elizabeth.
The McCain campaign does not have that yet. yet. I hope they get it.
let's see if... here's an email question from Ray in Sacramento. When reporters are away from the trail to relax, do they plug their ears and ignore politics? David Green, what do you do when you got that rare moment of downtime?
You try. I think sometimes you get a little worried. You still have the BlackBerry. You know that you're going to be getting the emails, and if you miss something, you'd sort of feel bad about it. But the times you can really relax, I spent a couple days on the beach when I had no BlackBerry service, and it was just heaven. And it was sitting there and just saying, there's nothing I could do right now. Even if I wanted to check the email and see what the campaign was saying, not a way to do it.
Elizabeth, your candidate is out on the road making news. Are you feeling like you're in withdrawal?
Thankfully, there are two reporters on McCain, and I am one of them, and my colleague Laura Meckler is out there covering him right now, and so I know he's in good hands. But it is impossible for me to turn off my BlackBerry for any kind of extended period of time because there's so much going on, and there's so much that we need to know about that I would have a hard time, I guess, unplugging totally.
You can read what Elizabeth Holmes has to say about the McCain campaign when she gets back on the bus in the Wall Street Journal. Thanks very much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
And, of course, you can continue to hear David Greene and Don Gagne as they cover the Clinton and Obama campaigns, respectively, on National Public Radio. And, guys, thanks very much for being with us today. You're doing
really
a great
pleasure,
job.
Neil.
Appreciate it.
Always fun. Thank you.
Coming up, we've got questions for you. Ethics questions about journalism. Stay tuned for Tom Rosenstiel. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.